Thanks very much, Jean. It's really good to come and share some of our experiences with modelling the likely responses of climate change to crop production in southern Australia, in this case, Victoria. I've listed my team members there. It wasn't on the abstracts. That's because I submitted the abstract from a dial-up modem somewhere in the backwaters of Australia, and we had serious trouble with the internet. So we just put one name. But without these team members, this work is not possible. I should start off by saying we launched this modelling work 3 years ago, and we have a modelling strategy related to our FACE work. And this was published in our Australian Agronomy Conference 2 years ago. The first objective was to validate contemporary wheat models like APSIM, CropSyst, that include submodels of CO2 against FACE experimental data, and to compare that against international data. We would also consider new components like diseases, and one particular is Balliella dwarf virus that we're looking into. We expect that we may do new work with controlled environments if the base models show to be inadequate. We then were to apply our models that we had that we think were satisfactory across our landscape to look at the potential response that we're looking at to climate change, and what kind of adaptations might be necessary. And then we also want to ask people to collaborate with us, and we wish to share our data. And so AgMIP looks a terrific opportunity for us and the rest of the world. The design differences between the crops, comparing the models. When you look at three crops that are popular, APSIM, CropSyst and DISAT, they're changing the growth ratio, or RUE, effectively. It's very much similar. If you look at the numbers on the right-hand side of that first graph, at 700 ppm, about 29-30% change. There's not much difference between the models. But APSIM has applied temperature corrections. That makes that a little different. The transpiration efficiency changes are very similar. We decided to use our model CAT, our catchment analysis tool, which is a landscape-based model that focuses on water, streams, and groundwater supplies and resources in catchments. Small catchments, but we've also applied this to very large catchments of 5 million hectares, looking at export of water and salt to the Murray River. The models are focused to give our analysis over space and over time, so we can have analysis at any point in the landscape through time, as long as our models have run, say, 50-year simulations, for instance, or grids down to 100 metres, more typically 200 metres or a kilometre. The elements of CAT comprise a whole lot of models: cropping, grazing, forestry, focus on nutrients, water and salt movement in a 3D manner across our landscape, and quite computationally complex. As anyone knows, if you're into water and groundwater modelling. And it took us around 8 days to do one simulation continuously with our high-powered PCs. That supercomputer may be great. So here's the performance of our crop model that's in CAT. Phenology, root mean square error for prediction of flowering date, 5 days. Pretty typical across a rainfall range of 800 mils to 300 millimetres. The biomass at anthesis there, pretty typical also, 1.2 tonne per hectare, root mean square error. The black dots show our FACE data for our first year. Pretty much on the one-to-one line, as has been observed in other FACE work. The grain yield graph on the bottom, also extending from our high rainfall zone of our 800 mil zone up to a 300 millimetre zone. Fairly noisy data set, but typically root mean square error, 3/4 of a tonne per hectare. And I'm not sure if we're going to get any better than that from these kinds of models, these daily time step models like DISAT, APSIM and CropSyst. This is another example of APSIM's performance on the second year's data. We haven't got all the data together yet. We're still struggling with errors in data and modelling it. But typically, the same response, around just over 1 tonne per hectare error in anthesis biomass and a half a tonne, in this case, error, root mean square error. You can see the high CO2s going up the line, but in some cases, there's a slight deviation close to the experimental error. This gives us confidence that our models might be quite applicable in this case. I should just say, what about climate change in Australia? What's coming? Well, this is an example from CSIRO's Mark 3.5 scenario. Example, in June at 2050, what you'd expect, significant decrease in rain in much of Australia, and in one case there, around Western Australia, there's a bit of an increase. The blue shows increase. The big issue is we grow crops around the edge of Australia, and it's still around the edges where there's serious declines in rainfall, despite the potential gains that we might have with high CO2. We've downscaled this data to daily data across our grid, and to look at the seasonal rainfall at 2050, we can expect mostly around 15 to 20% decline in rainfall in the northern parts of Victoria. This is the red areas. And only right at the southern coast is there virtually no change in the rainfall by that period. When we compare our yield response to this is absolute response. The blue and green shows increases in yield. That's in the central part of Victoria and to the south, and decreases up in the north. Decreases around 300 kilogram per hectare, typically 10%, 20% level. How does this go over the whole landscape? How can we adapt to these issues? Well, we tested this out by applying different sowing times and three different cultivar types, a short season, mid season, and long season type. And this is just showing a July and August comparison of one cultivar, a present-day long-season cultivar that you would not normally grow in the northern parts, but just by example, we're showing here that we can expect yield increases under Mark 2 or Mark 3, CSIRO's climate projections by 2050, of around 20 to 30% in the southern parts of Victoria. If we want to look at the absolute yield responses, here they are on this graph, classed in classes, and a comparison between the historic climate on the left and the Mark 3 on the right there, you'll see increases in area of the higher yielding areas in the south. So you see that yellow areas, doesn't look yellow on that map there, the khaki colour, increase in areas in the southern range, 3 to 4 tonne per hectare. If you sow later, the area increases and gets even higher in some cases there. Over time, what's expected is that the northern part of Victoria will decline in yield, and it's a little messy graph, the colours are quite dark there, but only in that very dark blue areas toward the middle and south of Victoria are the yields still increasing by 2070. All the other regions are decreasing. So, what do we conclude? I should say that some of our early work, Wang and Connor, at two locations, argued that the elevated CO2 would increase the yields by 10 to 30%. In our dry regions of Victoria. And the elevated temperature alone would decrease yield by 50%. They dared not say what would happen with the rain because the rainfall was believed to be not possible to know what would happen at that time. But they did conclude that there was scope in the present phenology to maximise yield and need to use longer season types to take account of that advancing temperature, which would typically 2 degrees would advance about 3 weeks the development of wheat. Additionally, Peter Grace in one location near Horsham place at Birchip, elevated CO2 plus elevated temperature, no change in yield, was the conclusion. When you reduce the rainfall by 20%, the yields went down to around 20% yield loss on average by 2050. So how does that compare to our study across our whole region now, comparing from the coast up to the Murray River? Reduced rainfall in the drier regions is the big problem, but reduced rainfall in the high rainfall zone, that 500 to 800 millimetre zone, is less of a problem. That's obvious. The semi-arid zone, yield loss is around 10 to 20% if you sow outside the June sowing. And in one climate scenario, Mark II, short season cultivars were shown to be just as good if you sowed at June. You went outside the zone, that time zone, the yields went down to beyond 20%. High gains, 10 to 20% in the south as expected, but the phenology we think needs to be maximised to present day long season types and employing later sowing times because of the seasonality shift in the climate change. And there were areas we expect yields to still be increasing due to the CO2 fertilisation effect. We think there's a strong need for a universal phenology model, despite the advances in this over the years. This kind of problem plagues us in our analyses. We had to use mean responses to photoperiod and temperature, and there are issues when we'll go across the globe in the AgMep analyses. That's about all, thanks. I should say, Gene, I forgot to invite people to collaborate with us on our board. We would love collaboration, but we won't just give the data out before we've worked out what it all means. Thank you very much.
Gary's left some time for questions, and we do have some seats down front if people would like to come forward. Yes.
Yeah, I know this is a very data-intensive study and computationally intensive, but I wonder if you could provide a little justification for the choice of the greenhouse gas scenario. As you probably know, A1FI is the highest of the greenhouse gas scenarios available. Maybe you could talk about what you might expect to see if you use a more moderate greenhouse gas emissions scenario.
Yeah, it'd be less. I don't think there's any question about that. Although we don't believe that those other scenarios are realistic. We think it's more likely this is where things are going. So we've just stuck with this one. We've changed our plan and ditched the lower ones for that reason. The answer will be, you know, some people have asked me, can you give us a worst case scenario? Well, that's nothing. And it could be worse. We've done this 2030, 2050. The problems are in the next couple of decades, actually. So that helps. Yeah.
But if the stakeholders are asking, and certainly they really need to know the worst case rather than the best case for risk management.
Yeah, fair enough. I just wondered if you're looking for a strong signal, for example.
No, well, we know about the greenhouse gases. They are higher than what's projected, but that's only one. The temperatures hasn't gone as high. But we've had 12 years of drought, and that's made people very worried in Australia. But now this year's a flood year, and the whole of Australia's green.
Go now, you won't see that again for a while.
10 years, yeah.
Hey, one more quick question. Thanks, Gary.
Thank you.